defunding public media doesn't punish NPR. It guts the emergency lifelines that small towns and tribal communities depend on, said Rima Dale, the CEO of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, in an op-ed article for the Free Press. As the headlines came in Friday night, the House gave the final approval to the Trump administration's $9 billion rescission package that aimed to claw back money already allocated for public broadcasting and foreign aid spending at a 216-213 vote. The bill eliminates $1.1 billion in public media funding that has already been approved for the next 2 years. In the same op-ed from Dale, said this, in quotes, "But NPR is not the real casualty here. Rural America is." The National Freedom of Community Broadcasters, or NFCB, represents nearly 200 community radio stations across the United States. Most of these stations are not affiliated with NPR or PBS. They are hyperlocal, often 100% volunteer-run operations serving small towns, tribal nations, and rural communities. They operate on shoestring budgets powered by donated time and secondhand equipment, end quote. 120 rural stations rely on CPB funding for at least 25% of their budget, and more than 33 stations rely on them for more than 50%. Without that funding, they are now being faced with the difficult task of replacing lost federal funding that underpins civic infrastructure and public safety communications. According to CPB, NGAO reports, up to half of rural stations could go off the air without federal funding. When those stations go silent, so do emergency alert systems communities rely on. During wildfires, floods, tornadoes, and other emergencies, KMUD spoke with Sarah Mead, the director of member engagement at NFCB. Mead supports member stations in which KMUD is a part of. Mead, in this special public affairs, will go in depth about the new challenges community radio stations might be facing now with this new clawback.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I've worked in community broadcasting for a little over a decade, and so my depth of knowledge is growing. This particular experience since the decision from the House back in June, and then the Senate, and then back to the House, this whole experience has been like a deep learning experience for me, and I think and many people who are involved in public radio and our listeners, just about what this moment signifies. So this is not the first time that administration has attacked, if you will, public media and access to public information and public broadcasting. This has been kind of going on since the early 90s. And what makes this different is that well, first of all, they succeeded in defunding the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But it also is a moment where there's some sort of misinformation about how public broadcasting portrays its news. And because of specific criticisms towards NPR specifically, all stations that are in the community broadcasting blanket, this fabric, are now getting affected, right? So it's kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater concept. And what this means for the public radio landscape, we're still figuring out, right? For some stations who receive funding from CPP directly through a community support grant, or CSG, as we call it, they feel it immediately because they have, you know, anywhere from 10% to over 50% of their budget is provided or is made up of this grant from CPB. So, you know, obviously they can look at their budget and say, oh, we're going to lose $130,000 starting today, or we're going to lose 68% of our budget starting today.
However, there are stations who aren't directly supported by CPB that are still processing the news. This means that those who do carry NPR programming may not be as affected.
Other stations who are not directly supported by CPB are still in the process of figuring out what this means. So if they are a station that carries NPR programming or they are an NPR member, this may or may not directly affect how their programming is. CPB supports NPR. It's about 1% of NPR's budget is CPB funding. And NPR just recently released this big statement that they're going to lower their annual budget to be able to provide support to their member stations that are feeling it the most. I'm not sure how they're going to do that. We'll see. But the stations that are not NPR stations and not CPB stations, this is the conversation that we're having. We're still trying to figure out how is this going to affect royalties and streaming and reporting? How is this going to affect the public radio satellite system, which is the system that content is distributed on for NPR programming and beyond, public radio exchange? And of course, I'm sure as you've heard, how is this going to affect the emergency alert system and community radio stations' ability to broadcast it, and if it will continue to exist, et cetera. So some things are very concrete and some things are still very much up in the air.
As there is much confusion on who actually is affected by this clawback, Mead explains more on this process and how it trickles down to rural stations like KMUD.
Yeah. So the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is it is a nonprofit, right? So it's not like a part of the federal government. It was a nonprofit that was created by Congress to ensure universal access to public media. And they provide essential funding for public television and radio. And that's kind of especially in these small and rural and tribal community radio stations across the country. So part of their ability to fulfill that mission of providing essential funding for public media, whether it's television or radio, is to support entities that are doing this good work all across the country. And like I said, especially small rural and tribal communities. So what that looks like on the television side is PBS. And what that looks like on the radio side is the Public Radio Exchange, or PRX, our community radio stations that fit a certain criteria. So a community radio station, if they want to apply for a CPB grant, essentially, they have to fit a set of eligibility like you would with any other grant. That includes making sure that you're definitely a non-commercial educational community broadcaster, that you have a certain operating budget, that you have a certain number of full-time staff. And there's a few other boxes that you have to kind of tick off, like what market are you serving? What type of demographic does your station serve and operate within? And that's CPB's way of making sure that there's no, or doing their best to ensure that there's no kind of corner of the country that does not have access to information.
CPB did give support to NPR and Public Radio Satellite System. This is what allows emergency alerts and national programming to be sent out immediately across the country or to rural areas like Humboldt.
Let me back up. One thing I wanted to say too is I mentioned PBS, I mentioned direct support to community radio stations. I will also say, just so that it's not lost in the ether, that, and as we know, as we've discussed, CPB does give or did give support to NPR, National Public Radio, and something called the Public Radio Satellite System, or PRSS, which we kind of think of as the distribution engine. So that operates, NPR distribution operates the Public Radio Satellite System, which is a nationwide distribution network, which is funded by CPB or was funded by CPB. So that's what allows the emergency alerts and national programming to be delivered instantly and reliably to stations across the country, even in remote or what, you know, can be called underserved areas. So that's the other part of the kind of terrestrial broadcasting side and the digital broadcasting side that CPB supports. Among many other things, those are just a couple of examples.
Although the decision of where the remainder of funds go, NFCB has no control over. Mead explains what their overall mission is now with this clawback and how local community stations can keep the momentum going.
I mean, this is just so recent that this NPR bit has come out. As far as I know, we don't have a plan or we don't have, how would you say this? It's not necessarily in our lane per se, at this point to try to influence how NPR will decide to spend their budget. However, part of NFCB's mission and vision and values since the very beginning is to advocate on behalf of community radio stations, especially our member stations who, you know, reach deep into their pockets and pay to be our members, invest in membership with NFCB. So, you know, like we've been having conversations with entities in the kind of greater capital P, capital M public media system for the last month or more about scenario planning and how to band together to support community radio stations all across the country. So while I can't say that we have a plan directly to approach NPR about how they're going to pick and choose what stations get a portion of this money, I can say that if there's a place for us to speak up on behalf of NFCB stations who are NPR members, we absolutely will.
Attempts to claw back media funding aren't new. As reported previously on KMUD News, back in 1969, President Nixon proposed similar cuts, prompted Fred Rogers, creator and host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, to testify before the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Communications in Defense of Public Broadcasting. What makes this current situation different is that Congress had already located enough funding to support public media for the next 2 years. Many stations had begun planning for long-term sustainability based on that commitment, but with sudden threats of cuts, those plans are now in jeopardy, and the playing field has drastically changed.
Why this feels so, well, there's a lot of reasons that this feels so impactful, but in the past, when there have been conversations about, you know, defunding public media, there's always been this feeling of, well, we know that we have funding for 2 years. So if something major happens in Congress, we know that stations and organizations, public media organizations that are supported by CPB, will have 2 years to figure something out. What makes this so different is that it's a rescission. So it starts now. There is no 2 year window to be able to figure anything out. Everybody's scrambling to figure things out right now.
So what's next with many questions still unanswered?
I think that stations right now are thinking about how to continue programming in general, and how the big question is how to meet the moment. So how to engage listeners in what's happening in the country, what's happening in the state of public media, and also being that lifeline to hope and education and direct action. So community radio stations are in this, they're always kind of towing this line of being the deliverer of hard news or hard information, whether it's hyper local community information about how Main Street is closed all day or national events, but then also having to be the source for potential solutions. And here's what you can do. Here's how to act. Here's how to engage. So now we're in the position of having to do that about our industry. So I think that stations are looking for any type of support and language around that. I think if NPR were to be able to choose what stations would get this money, to be totally honest, I think that stations are going to be using it to just funnel right into their general operating budget. You know, I don't think it's realistic to expect stations to create a new program or a new training project with this funding if what they're looking for is how to replace the funding that they just lost.
Mead thinks that this cutback could lead to more sustainability in community media.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's always a question of, or the topic of, like, we need to diversify funding. That's almost every single board meeting that I ever attended as a staff person and then a general manager of my station was about diversifying revenue. And it's a hard conversation to have because a lot of community stations are serving communities that have members that have given repeatedly for decades, right? So there's only so far that those pockets can reach. But there's the love and the trust of community radio will be ever abounding. So people will always, there's always more generosity. There's always more trust to be had in that relationship. And I think that a lot more conversations will be had about how to sustainably operate, not relying on federal funding and potentially not relying on state funding. It's frustrating to me because, you know, the whole reason CPB was created was to ensure that community radio was available to all, regardless of their income, their demographics, their education, you know, where they lived. And now the station leaders and fundraising teams on in stations are put in the position of having to really lean on individuals and maybe local foundations and certain funding streams that are probably already pretty stretched. That isn't to say that there's nothing out there. I mean, there's a lot of money to be had out there. And a lot of it is not, you know, a lot of it, I think, could be made available to public radio. And I think a lot of it probably will be made available to public radio.
Mead makes it clear that they're not going down without a fight. They emphasize that this funding clawback isn't just a budget adjustment. It's a serious threat to survival of local independent media. One common misconception, Mead says, is that the only large network like NPR or PBS are affected. In reality, it's the small community-run stations, the ones with the fewest resources, that stand to lose the most.
Our CEO, Rima, wrote an op-ed that we published on our website that you can find at nfcb.org. But one of the things, it opens with something that I think is on more people's minds than I had originally thought, which is this idea that defunding public media, defunding CPB, it doesn't just punish NPR. It guts the emergency lifelines that small towns and tribal communities depend on. And that's Rima's quote. And I think when you're talking about this misconception, I think that this was kind of like a big, bold move to send a message about taking a stance against, you know, overly liberal news and journalism. And unfortunately, I think the reality is that stations that are depended on for, you know, not just EAS and not just that, but their sense of connection with their community are feeling it. And I would also say that there is conversation about like what station's going to go dark, who's going to be lost. And I don't want to downplay that fear and that concern. And certainly we may see that, but I also think that just because of the spirit of community radio and listeners who are not, you know, listeners are not, they're not bystanders in this thing, right? There's ways to be active bystanders, to be participants in this. And I think that no station is going to go down without a fight. And I think that I've said this in other interviews, like I'm a firm believer in have mic will broadcast. Like as long as a station has a tower and a mic and a board and one person who's passionate to be there, they're going to broadcast for as long as they possibly can, you know? So I think that that's more of a reality of what we're going to be seeing now is how stations may be operating in survival mode, which is a really hard place to operate from. And it also can be fertile ground for ingenious solutions and community activation. And so, you know, it's hard to say, like, I'm angry and I definitely have, you know, fighting words in me. But I also think that, you know, community radio and access to the joy and connection that it provides is going to abide.
So if you're listening right now and wondering how to keep hearing your local voices, Mead shares how you can get involved and help ensure your trusted local news sources stay right here in the community.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's a really important question. And part of it is this education piece. You know, I think listeners, especially listeners of community radio, they're not just consumers, you know, like they're not kind of like automaton taking in information and going about their day. Like community radio listeners are kind of by default, like engaged citizens. Just by listening to community radio, you can't help but be engaged. You're listening to your neighbor. You're listening to the cashier at the local co-op, or you're listening to this like incredible music discoverist that you've been listening to for the past decade, or you know what I'm saying? So there's this sense of like deep connection that happens with community radio. So I think education and sharing what you know with other people in your town is major. Like having conversations, I think, is big. I've noticed in my town that I'll have conversations with people that are close friends or that have been listeners of community radio for so long. And I'm still finding opportunities to educate about, like, here's the difference between this station, which is, you know, totally grassroots and not an NPR station, not supported by CPB, and this station, which we also have access to, which is an NPR station, or which is connected to a college, or, you know, to be able to shine a light on like how all those different types of stations complement and supplement each other in the communities. I think that's major. I don't think that this is a time to sort of pick and choose and separate and cast value judgments, because in reality, they do complement and supplement each other. My community has access to both ends of the spectrum, right? With like an NPR station that's supported by CPB and a fiercely grassroots independent station. And we also have community stations. And that's kind of the beauty of public media, is that listeners have access to all of that. So I think education is a big thing. Obviously donating when you can, if you make a regular contribution, considering increasing it by whatever tiny or large percentage is actually affordable to you. I think that will make a much bigger difference than we think. Turning your once or twice annual gift into a recurring gift, when donors can switch from one time a year to any kind of recurring, whether it's monthly, bi-monthly, twice a year, that creates a major sense of sustainability for the organization to know that they have a certain chunk of money that they can rely on, no matter how small it is, it can cause major relief and can make some noticeable impacts positively in the general operating at the station. And at this point, in terms of like bigger advocacy action, I don't know yet what the sort of call is. Like, I don't know what our big ask is or who we're asking at this point. I think creative solution seeking is where a lot of people are at right now. Like, okay, well, if we can't rely on the government, if we can't rely on a state funder, if we can't rely on that, what can we do? So I think any kind of like community conversations and organizing to support this critical resource, you know, we're going to see some of that.
What does this mean for KMUD? Without federal CPB funding, we are facing an existential threat. Unlike urban public radio stations with access to corporate sponsors and large university budgets, rural stations like KMUD depend on a combination of a federal support, listener contribution, underwriting, fundraising events, and grants. This means difficult choices will need to be made out about programming, staff, and equipment. It means potentially reducing our hours of operation or eliminating crucial services we provide, including less local news coverage, fewer emergency updates, and a weaker voice for our region. It means that we'd need even more volunteer hours, and many of our volunteers are giving as much as they can already. In our rural communities, cell towers are sparse, and the internet service is unreliable. When storms roll in, earthquakes hit, or wildfires start, we can't always count on modern technology to keep us updated, but we can count on KMUD. For decades, KMUD has been here during every major emergency, providing real-time updates for local sources within our community. When you support KMUD, you're supporting a culture of mutual aid, environmental stewardship, and inclusiveness. Most importantly, you're affirming that the bonds between us, forged through shared geography, common challenges, and mutual care, are stronger than any budget cut or federal policy change. When you tune in, you're not just hearing music or news. You're participating in a living, breathing network of neighbors who care about each other. We are not asking you to save us. We are asking you to join us in saving something we've built together. Whether you can give $10 or $10,000, your support sends a clear message. Our rural community matters, our local voices deserve to be heard, and the culture of connection we've created through KMUD is worth preserving. If you're already a supporter, please consider making an additional donation or increasing your monthly donation. We encourage you to please ask your friends and family to join you. Share our story on social media. Tell your neighbors why KMUD matters to you. Stand with KMUD. Stand with your community. Stand with culture we've created together. Please donate now at KMUD.org or at our Venmo at KMUD Radio, because radio isn't just what we listen to, it's who we are. I'm Jordan Pangelinan for KMUD.